Well, there's a couple of things really this week. I mean, Sebring starting off the World Endurance Championship, and of course the other big story is the big story at Le Mans, which is going to be the Delta Wing. Whatever else happens, Delta Wing, I thought, very nicely launched right at the very beginning of the week rather than on, say, Friday, to take a little bit of steam out of Sebring. So that's perhaps worth touching on a little bit. When are we going to see the car first? Well, it's going to run at Sebring, isn't it? It's going to do some laps.
I think it ran yesterday. It's part of a test program, turning some laps, and more importantly, turning left and right.
Yeah, actually, and for the doubters, the onboard video that they posted just before they launched the car, which Marino drove the car in California a week or so ago. I mean, apart from the fact that the front of the car is narrow and you can't see wheels sticking out as you would do on a Formula One car, it did actually seem to go round corners convincingly fast. So, I mean, you know, we'll have to wait and see exactly what sort of lap times it will produce at a test where other cars have tested, because it's now about what the overall performance level is, not will it just understeer off at the first corner, because obviously it plainly isn't going to.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a massive PR exercise for all concerned. That includes the ACO, who wanted to have something with an alternative car. They were going to have alternative fuel, and they've got a very alternative car sitting in Garage 56. If my French was better, I'd tell you what 56 was in French. Thank you very much indeed. And Nissan have pulled off an absolute marketing coup by getting their name emblazoned all over it, and also another coup by launching it in London at a time where you could feed all the hacks.
Yep.
And so it's gone all over the mainstream media in the UK as Nissan's Batmobile.
Yes, just got it in before they all started writing their stories when they arrived the other end in Melbourne.
Basically, it's while all the journos were in the air, flying from the UK to Melbourne, launch this, feed up the people who are kind of the number twos, and they go, well, I'll get me column inches and off I go.
People on the sports desk who just normally write the odd little headline, so they get a full story. So, I mean, that obviously is for the future, and that's particularly the future come June and when we get to Le Mans. But the other big story for World Endurance Racing, full stop, this year, is the sudden and sort of unheralded demise of Peugeot's programme, because, I mean, their team, at least, thought they were all ready to rock and getting ready to test, and were in Sebring 8 weeks ago, I guess, now, when suddenly the plug was pulled, guys, don't roll the car out, just put it in a crate and get back on a plane.
Yeah, it's one of the most unceremonious cancellations of a programme you could possibly imagine. And, you know, a number of drivers who have signed up for the year, which has obviously seen a very quick shuffle down, and then Peugeot has been snapped up by people you'll see this weekend, it's left Audi with the kind of, all of us kind of feeling that they're going to have to do something very seriously wrong to lose here at Sebring this weekend. But however, of course, we do know we have Toyota in the wing, and Toyota have kind of stepped up the plate slightly with the removal of Peugeot by upping their entry to two cars immediately for both Spa and for Le Mans. They weren't ready to hit here. They're going to run cars in all bar one of the other races as well. The Audi and the FIA played their part by making the Manufacturers' Championship a count of 6 out of 8, so you can drop 82 scores, and therefore we will have some form of championship.
So you can drop the two races that Audi doesn't finish particularly well in. I don't see how that helps anybody
else
at all.
It helps Toyota, because they're not going to two events.
Yes.
So they can drop those events. And also it's a best car to score as well. So,
yeah, you see, that makes a lot more sense, because then you can throw as much mud at the wall as you like, but only one's allowed to stick. So.
And the other thing, of course, we found out, which was not a surprise, was interesting, was, of course, that when Audi and Toyota do finally meet, it'll be a battle of hybrids as well, with Audi running two new hybridised R18 e-trons, which are still,
I quite like that. It's
e-tron.
Quite... Yeah, but
Quattro
you see...
e-tron.
For gentle followers of our vague age, I mean... It's sort of lost on the 20-something.
It sounds like a Buck Rogers episode.
Well, but...
Wolfgang.
But Tron was very futuristic when it came out, and I quite liked...
I remember playing the Tron machine.
There you go.
And
I quite like that it's slightly got that feel of almost Back to the Future-iness.
So they reach 88 miles an hour, and that'll be it. So, as you can see, the calendar is starting here, the 17th of March in Sebring.
Yep.
And then we go to Spa in May. Quite interesting race in Le Mans in June. And then we go on to Silverstone, which is a very small trip for you and I, Mark.
Yeah, very handily so, although I imagine for an awful lot of fans. I mean, they've chosen the classic races, haven't they? You know, Spa 1000K, Silverstone 1000K, Sebring 12 Hours. You know, that's the kind of stuff you want in a world championship, you know. OK, Bahrain and so on have yet to establish themselves, but... you know, Sebring is a great place to start. If you can't start at Daytona, and we understand why you can't, because their rules are completely different, then to start a world championship in the other big Florida race is a very valid place to do it. Gives you a monster field. I mean, it's the Daytona 500 almost to kick off the season. Vast array of cars in all sorts of different classes. And a hell of a competition. I mean, it's the other thing about Sebring compared to Le Mans, slightly more cars, but in half the area. Mm-hmm. That's four idiots racing bicycles around your lounge instead of just two. So, and I mean, it's very, very tough on the drivers.
And, of course, with the dual championships, there are nine classes here. So there are nine classes all battling each other, and sometimes themselves, at various different times. And so those of you who are watching on the WEC stream will see that we have... some very nice pictures, and showing it is lovely and sunny over in Sebring, isn't that? Isn't that marvellous? As we sit here in the dark.
Qualifying is about to get underway. Each category will have a 15-minute session. So we'll start with the GTM cars, move on to the GT Pro, then we'll have the LMP2, and finally the LMP1. There's been a lot of red flags and damaged cars throughout the practice, so now is the moment of truth to see what these cars can really do.
Ah, the fragrant Louise Beckett in the pit lane. She and others will be reporting for us for the World Endurance Championship. Just saw a little bit of a stand-up with one of the Alex Joe Porsche drivers. This is Tracy Krohn's Ferrari 458 Italia and the Krohn Racing organisation. Nick Jonsson is really the sort of backbone there of the organisation, with Michele Rugolo joined in. And again, you know, this is sort of turning into a bit of a bonanza for drivers for hire. You know, if you're a good, competent sports car driver, there's an awful lot of teams out there who need third drivers for a lot of action.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, you do see the people, they announce their first couple of drivers, and then you see all these, the usual suspects get picked up very quickly as a third driver, be you a GT specialist, be you an out-of-work P driver, and of course a number of those come from the ranks of P for Peugeot, actually.
Yes, indeed.
You know, for example, Starworks here have picked up Stefan Sarrazin, which must be one of the free transfers of the decade. We're waiting now for the first session to get underway.
Yep. Which... waiting for the green flag. Tracy Krohn on the pit wall. So I would imagine that Nick Jonsson will be going out to do the qualifying.
Well, there's an interesting rule change within WEC. Well, not for LMX, but WEC, they now say that the person who qualifies the car is the person who started.
That's fine.
And that never used to be the way. And I think that a lot of that is because they want to make sure that you don't have a super quick driver qualifying the car.
Yeah.
And they're not starting it, so they can stick out the
less super quick.
A gentleman driver.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, because you then, as you say, you know, you don't get a car that's on pole being driven by you and me. Mm. So, or a rich version, a very, very rich version of you and me.
You mean Martin Haven, Esquire.
Very, very rich.
From the Havens.
Indeed. So, I mean, so that makes a lot of sense. That's a rule that's been the case in the American Le Mans series since time immemorial. You know, you start with the driver that set the time on the tyres on which you set them. And if you change engines, you get sent to the back of the grid anyway. But it does mean that the qualifying package is what you're going to start the race with. And that means if you do try something a bit fancy and falutin, then you're going to end up paying for it in the dozen laps as you have to peel off into the pits.
And obviously people normally say, well, what's the point of qualifying a 24-hour race or 12-hour race? Well, there's a big point here, because within the World Endurance Championship, there is a point for pole. So that is a point in the course. There are many championships running here. There's only one drivers' championship, Martin. That's for the P1 drivers. But there are various.
Do you know what?
For all the other.
I was confused with you and Hindy talking about this with Graham Goodwin in a run into Le Mans, and I still am no wiser as to who is going to be a champion in what.
Well,
I think we'll wait till the gala at the end of the year.
It has been recorded. I did record a Nick Explains It All. I'm not sure whether that's on the rotation yet on Radio Le Mans. It's certainly very soon. Right, he sat down and had to dive through several FIA documents to work out what was going on, and kept going, oh, that's interesting. Oh, that's interesting. The other thing that's changed from last year for WEC is they're now using the standard FIA point scoring. So it's 25, 18, LR, F1 and WRC, and not the system used the last couple of years, which was 15 for a win. So those sort of things. Luckily, the one thing we don't have to do at this event at all, Martin, is refer back to previous scores or work out where we are in the championship. Everyone starts at the same place, which effectively is zero.
Yes, which is great because nobody's got any history in this thing at all, although obviously the cars and the teams and everybody else has. Now, those of you who haven't yet and are planning to sit and watch your telegogs for the next, 24 hours, some of it being Sebring, some of it being Melbourne, spottersguides.com. Go download for free your spotter's guide with not only every driver, but also every car on the racetrack this weekend. And then you can play Let's Beat the Commentator as he tries to figure out which of the numerous black Porsches is that one.
I'll be honest with you, Martin, one of my favourite things you do, I'm not going to hear it this year, is your first GP2 race.
Yes.
You and Gareth are sitting there desperately trying to work out which car it is and then which member of the team it actually is.
Yes. Well, I shall... She'll look forward to watching somebody else struggle with that for the rest of the season because that is just going to be a complete and utter backside. So cars are out on track then for the first qualifying session. 30-minute period. And we're looking at the cars making their way out. Mikey Waltrip's Ferrari team, the Air Corsa team running that one for him. And again, he's been talking during the week about how excited he is to come to Sebring. All sorts of new adventures for Michael Waltrip as he takes up this sports car racing lark a little bit more concertedly.
Sports car racing lark.
But he's made, you know, he's stepped back from a full Sprint Cup season, so he can do other things, and I think he's really, really finding his feet quite nicely.
No, I think, the story obviously of that car, though run by a different team last year at Le Mans, was of course the incident with Mike Rockefeller, which saw his teammate Rob Calvin run, I think we all now agree in hindsight, being unfairly disqualified.
Before
that was a bit of a knee-jerk reaction. I think everyone said it was an overreaction. But they're back and they're back for more, and they'll be at Le Mans. That's one of the things. Remember, you have a full season entry of the World Endurance Championship. You are guaranteed a Le Mans slot, hence the reason it's pretty much capped at 30. When they could have had a few more entries in there because they didn't have the space at Le Mans itself.
I'm liking the little audio effect there as they put the new graphic up for every team. You get that little cha-ching noise. Do you think that's accidental?
Radio-only listeners will now know that if we suddenly become much more informed, it's because of shing. Ah, there's information for us.
Well, cha-ching, it brings that's the noise that they're making, a kind of
cash noise.
Swooshy noise. Yeah, but it's a cash register noise. It's very Grace Brothers. First time has been set. Rui Aguash is fastest at the moment. Again, if you haven't yet and you're online, ALMS.com or scoring.ALMS.com will take you to live timing and scoring courtesy of IMSA.
Not wish to mention Formula 3000 too often, but there's some very familiar names from the ranks of Formula 3000.
Formula 3000 are us. Gelco Matias, Paolo Roberti and Rui Aguas. Exactly. What do they share in common? Dominic Farnbacher never did Formula 3000, so
but he was on the support programme in the Porsches.
Yes, very likely.
So effectively, everyone asks you, why do you bother following the single-seater stuff? Because they end up in sports cars.
Because eventually they'll do something interesting.
Because they want to get paid. Because these, of course, all the quality. It's the GTM class. The GTMs, you have to have one amateur driver, obviously, and you have up to two professionals. The amateur is a silver or a bronze, which is down to success they've had, and also is then cross-referenced by age. Yeah. But you can employ anybody you want in the other chairs. We see some pretty fast guys running with the amateur teams. I mean, Patrick Long in the Flying Lizards last year. I'm not sure if he's this year. Checked my numbers.
Well, Pat Long will be definitely in one of the factory-supported Porsches. The big factory-supported Porsche will be out in the next group, the Felbermayr 77 car. Richard Leitz, Mark Lieb and Patrick Pillet, three full-on factory-finance drivers. In fact, that GT Pro class, that is going to be one of the big features. One of the slight disappointments, obviously, in Sebring is that there is only predominantly Audi with the new R18 Plus running at the front of the P-Class, but there's an awful lot of new P-Cars to be looking at and an awful lot of time to do it. The other thing is, because there's no Peugeot Audi hogging all the headlines and hogging all the TV time, everybody else is going to get a much bigger crack of the whip, and to be good news.
Well, you have three of the new HPD cars, which are getting up to speed, looking through the qualifying sessions we had here. You've also got the number of Lotus and number of iterations they come through, including another car that's branded itself Lotus Rebellions, and we have an absolutely stellar and as varied as possible you could have within a COSCAT environment of P2s as well. So the actual prototype numbers are way up, and it's the only one disappointment, as you say, is the lack of Peugeot. But it should actually be very good for the egalitarian with this all, because we will see an awful lot more of the rest of the battles during the 12 hours tomorrow.
Well, the other great news for people that have to work in the paddock is that Peugeot aren't there saying no to everything and physically ejecting you from their garage when you want to have, I don't know, a conversation
sad, really,
with the driver.
A bit sad, because they got better in there last year.
No, they didn't.
Well, it didn't me.
Yes.
Yes. If you haven't got a camera, you just walk in.
Clock running on the fastest car at the moment out on track, the 34 Green Hornet Racing Porsche, which is Peter Lassart, Damien Faulkner, I'm guessing, and Sebastian Blakemolen is... Oh, that's Damo. So,
oh, yes.
Oh, dear. So,
congratulations on your engagement, Damo.
Our ear on the Oval correspondent will be weeing this over somewhere out in,
he's already,
in Middle
he's
America.
He's excited about the victory in the Mazda GT Cup. So this is a real race. Goodness knows what we like now.
And he is just about to pick up a slipstream from Patrick Bonhauser and Pedro Lamy's number 50 Labra Competition Corvette. Glad to see Labra Competition with two Corvettes in the field.
Well, the thing to remember is the WEC GT Championship, there is a world championship for manufacturers, that takes the best two results in GT regardless whether they're AM or Pro.
Mm.
So having both those Corvettes would be the results they can take from those two results.
Now, the Green Hornet car, which was on a fastest lap, aborted it by coming into the pits then. Do you think he's not got a digital display on the dash, or did they just tell him, oh no, don't give it away by going quickly?
I think we have to ask. I mean, no, David, you probably just got confused.
Yeah. Well, yeah, possibly. In box, box, box next time, or box, box, box now, it's quite easy to spot the difference.
Well, you know.
Another faster lap from the luxury racing Ferrari, car 58, Dominic Farnbacher, in the first of those two luxury racing cars.
Sharing with Pierre Hayet and Francois Jakubowski.
Yeah.
I'll have a real run at that name and jumped in.
I could see you were going to wildly overpronounce it.
Come on, we managed to get through 10 hours of Petit Le Mans without wildly overpronouncing everybody. It was fine.
Plus, no Franco-Belgian will ever have a hard J, so it'll be Jakubowski.
I was assuming he's from sort of Polish extraction.
Yeah, I don't think so. Not with a Christian name like Francois.
Now, it's good to see the GT AM cars have managed to be faster qualifiers than the GTC cars, yep. Which is as they should be, because they are basically a faster chassis. The one car that's letting down the field is the number 70, the Jean-Philippe Berloc Corvette. But that's
well, there are three reasons for that.
They've got a problem.
They start with Jean-Philippe
Berloc. Yeah.
No.
I think you'll find it. It's a Christophe Brunet and Pascal Gibbon car.
Yeah.
Again, the second of the Labra machines, but that's actually in the pit, so they might be trying too much. Sean Edwards is out there in the GT Cup, GTC, yep. Car 30. I mentioned him because obviously he was one of the winners at Dubai, 24 hours.
Well, again, look at the GT Cup engine. The fast guys there are out at the moment. Lee Keane, race winner at LMS. Damien Faulkner and Sean Edwards, both very experienced Porsche racers. Nicky Thiem, who's the son of Kurt Thiem. Spencer Pumpelly, who's been racing in the LMS almost since it started. Dion von Moltke, fast new driver. Kevin Estra, another Super Cup racer. Kurt Wagner won the ALMS for Alex Jobe in the very first season. So, I mean, again, he's got a decade and more of experience in Porsches. So it's a very, very close battle.
And currently in sixth place in GT AM is Pedro Lamy in the other Labra competition. So that's, first of all, you get a prize when you spot all the drivers who were racing with Peugeot last year who are driving somewhere else. That's your first point.
Pedro's now gone up to fourth, so that'll be his second lap.
Look at that, it's his laps completed too.
Yes, exactly.
So it's amazing, all these years, you can read a timing screen, because we've often wondered, Martin.
No, he was in sixth, so he set a time. Now he's in fourth, so he set a moderately quick time. And when the tyres come in, he will then go to the top of the pile.
Well, let's see if you are correct, as we see... it is still Dominic Farnbacher with the Ferrari 458 from Nicholas Jonsson with the Ferrari 458. So it's Ferrari, Porsche, Chevy, Ferrari, Porsche and Chevy within the GT AM. Interesting, in the GTC it's Porsche, because that's...
Because it's a Porsche class. Indeed, yeah. Alex Jobe racing in with Dion von Moltke in their second car, but the fast car, number 22 car, with Lee Keane at the helm at the moment, seems to be running quite nicely. Second at the moment in the class to Sean Edwards, who's gone to the top of the GT Cup class, and that explains what C comes from. Ooh, let's have a listen. No, just had a very quick view there of the end of a Michael Waltrip interview, but didn't get the audio for it. So, again, it is the first 10 minutes of a brand new championship with a brand new truck and a brand new continent for the people that are organising the TV, so we will definitely give them a little bit of leeway.
The French have been keen on Americans since about 1776, really, have they?
Well, this is their kind of part of the world, isn't it?
It is, actually, yeah.
Or used to be.
Down by the Everglades is where they have the...
Wow, big lap here from the 58-car luxury racing Ferrari is already the fastest. And Dominic Farnbacher, 0.35 up in the first sector of his next lap.
The last one, Martin, he did a 2.14, which is, given that the average run is about 2.1. So he cooled everything down, looked for the space and went again.
Again, when you're in single car qualifying, or not single car qualifying, but in small group qualifying like this, there is a lot of room on this racetrack. It's just when the other 62 loonies are out there, it tends to get a little more fraught.
Riaguas is trying his hardest to pull that car up from its current fifth in GTAM.
Wow! 58 is 1 second ahead of pole at the second timing sector, so Dominic Farnbacher really kicking this thing around. Beg your pardon, it's not Farnbacher, it's Nick Johnson. Crone Race, now they've switched the clock on us, so we're watching the Crone Racing car, not the Farnbacher car.
They got a clock on a couple of them there, so they're also clocking the AF Corsa Waltrip car.
Well, all sorts of anniversaries being celebrated, not least of which is 60 years of the Sebring 12 Hours itself this season. I was going to say started in 1922, that'd be 90 years, wouldn't it? So not quite that long ago, 1972. And again on screen watching the Momo Porsche.
Farnbacher does cross with a slightly faster time. He's in a 2.02, means he's got a lead about 1.08 seconds from second place in the class, which is Nicholas Johnson.
Sean Edwards pedalling the Momo car, still at the head of the GT Cup field.
Sean Edwards is probably worth a search on YouTube if you finish watching.
Oh, yes.
He's done some head cam from this, including a what can only be described as a near miss. During practice. So
yes, somebody appeared to think it was a good idea to stop dead on the straight. Now, Sean is slowing down on the straight, but staying well out of the way.
Well, it was a big accident last night. Yes. Practically, someone stopped for no discernible reason. The cars hit him.
It does happen.
He stopped to avoid other people, and then he didn't turn and stop.
Yeah, didn't have his hazard warning lights on. The other good Sean is an onboard lap of the Nürburgring in the rain. From that Super Cup race that they held there with all those different classes racing together. So, yeah, go and YouTube that. Sean Edwards, Nordschleifer, Wet, and OMG probably is in there somewhere in the description as well.
Blimey!
It is properly blimey. Dominic Farnbacher still fastest then in the 58 Ferrari. So we've certainly seen the battle lines drawn out between them, the 58 and the 57, the two Ferraris. Pedro Lamy's Corvette. The McDonald's car is now up to third fastest because he's now set a fourth fastest lap, or a fourth flying lap.
Fourth flying lap.
And where is he? 201.6 compared to 20.2, so 1.4 seconds away. I wonder if he'll find a little bit more in the Corvette.
I think Farnbacher was certainly giving them the full beans on the Ferrari there to make sure he got that point. So it's it is a key thing. You've got first blood for Ferrari, first blood for their attempts to gain them the World Endurance Champion, Manufacturers World Championship. Are they two World Champions? Three World Champions? They're Manufacturers World Cup.
See, now you're confusing me again, and all I'm hearing is mwah, mwah, mwah.
World Championship mwah, for drivers, P1. World Championship for manufacturers,
yes.
P1. World Cup for manufacturers, GTE. And then I think it's trophies.
Okay, fine. Good, good, good. Checkered flag waves at the end of GTAM / GTC qualifying. And in the GTAM class, with Pedro Lamy having backed off on his last lap, he's not on a flyer. Sean Edwards still is, though. Dominic Farnbacher and Nick Johnson look like they are the fast two. Or they are the fast two and may well stay there. Luxury Racing and Crone Racing's Ferrari first and second. Larbra Competition third with their Corvette in the GTAM class. And Sean Edwards from Lee Keane, Damien Faulkner and Dion von Moltke in the Porsche Cup class. and the other Corvette did get out and did get running decently quickly. So Jean-Philippe Belloc fifth in class with that car that only in the end it did do four laps, so it must have had an extra installation lap for some reason.
Just wanted to go a look round. Yeah. It's nice weather.
It is lovely weather.
Okay, the driving round. Oh, I've had one more look round the track, pass with the aircraft.
27 degrees. That's not bad in Fahrenheit. What's that in modern?
80
Celsius. Yeah, wow, that's hot.
28 is...
No, it's
28 is 82, so 27
Is 80. Wow, that is hot.
It's pleasant, isn't it?
Did I misread that then? In that case, is track temperature really 36 degrees? Gosh, that seems very warm indeed.
It's middle of the day, isn't it? Over there.
Luxury racing then on pole in the GTE Pro class from Krohn Racing, Ferrari 1-2, Corvette 3rd, Team Felbmeier Proton 4th, Labra Competitions Corvette in 5th position behind the Porsche, then AF Corsa's Waltrip car, another Ferrari in 6th position, and the final car is in 7th spot, the JWA Avila car, 4.1 seconds back in the GT Am class, which is a bit of a margin.
But as they say, it's a long race.
It is. Long way to go. Yokohama man and the brake man both checking the tyres and the brake temperatures on Sean Edwards' Momo Porsche. Looking resplendent. It's a kind of variation of the traditional scarlet and yellow of Giampiero Moretti's. It's a sort of metallic claret.
It's a reflective wrap.
It is.
That.
And already I did one of those. It was never a hit.
Is it not? I'm not sure whether that's what they want to hear. I'm not quite sure if I'm the man of the world. I don't know if I'm the Biggie Smalls. I'm not sure. I've got to think about it.
Yeah. Navel gazing, you know, and gangster.
What can I do with my hose? I don't know. You know whether they really want me or not.
Yes. Do my hoes really appreciate me for
that reflective wrap? So already out are the cars for the GTE Pro and the GT class of the LMS. So there's a big batch of cars we're seeing here, and they come straight out. As the time finishes for the previous, the next cars go out. There will be a 5-minute gap between the end of this session and the start of the prototype qualifying session, in which I'm going to wave at Tim and see.
Were you plumping?
Point, I'm hoping at that point in 5 minutes I'll be able to have a quick word with Graham Goodwin over in the press room at Sebring.
Well, do you think we should?
But no, after this qualifying.
Well, that would be spoiling him though, surely.
No, he needs to tell us what's going on.
Right, so GT Pro then, I mean, this again, it's like Le Mans, isn't it? Who on earth are you going to pick from this? I mean, just for ka-ching, just for pole, never mind anything else. This is proper radio because you can hear the producer arguing with the presenter. Very good. We are going to get Graham Goodwin up on it. I mean, there's just too many good cars to choose from.
There are, and it's very, as you run down the entries within the GT class, you start off with the first car you start with is Giancarlo Fisichella, Jimmy Bruni, and Tony Vierlander, and you think, well, I don't need to go any further than that. And then you have a BMW that's in the ALMS and not in WC. And then we have the luxury racing Ferrari. Then we have a second AF Corsa with Andrea Bertolini, of course, a long-time Ferrari test driver.
Yep.
So the Ferrari's very strong. We, of course, have car 97, which is the works Aston Martin.
Yep.
Which is the car you can't look past.
Gulf Aston Martin.
77, which is the Leeds Pilet Porsche.
It's just rammed full of class drivers. I mean, properly talented drivers. So it's going to be... I mean, and this is going to be really one of the big battles of the entire season, is who is going to come out on top of this? Because it is a knife fight, and you bet you brought a big knife as well.
Well, they bought some big engines and big guns. cars this year, obviously, slightly different. They're certainly, the Porsches are the most visibly different. They've gone for a very wide-bodied RSR.
Yep.
Design. All the cars went slightly wider at the end of the season to take advantage of some waivers given to other teams. They've all kind of caught up. Porsche, after having a couple of poor years, must be looking for a big one. As we were on board with Jimmy Bruni, that's the fantastic sound effects you can hear coming through the background of this, and Jimmy is wringing the neck of the 458. People forget Jimmy Coulson is a Formula One driver who did a year in Minardi. His teammate Giancarlo Fisichella is a multiple F1 race winner, and more importantly, certainly by midway through last year, certainly got the hang of running a GTE car, and that was a formidable pairing. And in fairness, the addition of Tony Vierlander doesn't really weaken it. So it's something you've got to shoot at, especially with the expertise of AF Corsa. And of course, also the sheer resource they have, because they're running so many cars and they're helping run other cars, it just gives you that kind of critical mass to sort things out.
No, that's absolutely right. And you know, when you get to a new track, as they will, I mean, here, for instance, you can run different setups on different cars, and so you double the amount of input you're getting, which is exactly what you need. Out of the final corner, and again, the onboard camera showing bright blue skies, lots of fluffy clouds sitting up high in the air, not interrupting the temperature. And this is a big, fast lap from Jimmy Bruni, using all the runoff area out of corner one on this airfield circuit. It's all concrete, and most of the areas of the track have either got black patches of tarmac to hold the concrete together, or huge amounts of black rubber down on them through the first elements
There's
of the track.
There's a fantastic documentary which has been put on a little bit of support. This is detected about turn 10.
Yes.
It's on Vimeo if you look for it. And the interesting thing they said there is these front straight has not been resurfaced since the first time they raced there.
Well, the front stretch, and in fact, actually quite a lot of it, as you'll see from the onboard pictures, hasn't been resurfaced because it's concrete since they were running Mitchell bombers in and out of here.
Was it Mitchell's? They didn't get them.
Oh, I don't know. B-17, something or other.
You should have toughed that one out. I'd have believed you. You should actually been there.
Yeah, well, you know, I was there in spirit.
You were there in 1944.
That's one for Google. Fastest lap at the moment is from the 97 Aston. 1100s up on pole, so 1100s up in pole position, 97. I'm guessing that's Dazzle. Is Darren Turner in the car?
No,
Stefan Mucha.
Our timing is a tad behind.
Our timing seems to have died on its backside.
There it goes.
And still not quicker than the GTM cars, though. And it shows Jörg Bergmeister at the top of the pile rather than Stefan Mucha.
It won't then spit the cars out, so you have to kind of look at the new ones added. So
yeah, but it should show them in at least in time order, shouldn't it?
It does. Bergmeister from the Zaro.
So green minus 0.11 in fact means red plus 0.11. Oh, so that's a new way of looking at a clock. Excellent.
And let's now call that Stefan Mucha is indeed the fastest
person. Oh, there you go. So he is fast.
00174. He's got just 100 second fast and doing it far back. But don't forget, there's no reason why the GT Pro should be much quicker than the GT Am cars, because now you have the 458 Am, it's a year old, and you've got Dominic Farnbacher driving it. Where's the problem? Where's the disconnect? You know, if the other two drivers...
Yes, exactly. Over a qualifying lap, no, you're absolutely right. If you've got a star in the car, then it should go quite nicely. But over the race distance, three stars in your reasonably priced car would certainly help
so
it go
is,
a lot quicker.
The Aston Martin Vantage V8, which of course has been around for a number of times, has had a very, very patchy gestation over the past 4 or 5 years. I remember seeing it in a number of Le Mans series races, often with issues of engine. Obviously, a lot of problems when Lord Drayson had the car. And of course, but it has now got the full focus of the factory after the, lack of success in the AMR01.
It is having less problems than the AMR1.
There'll be two AMR01s at Le Mans this year.
Yes.
Because both the Pescarolo and the Delta Wing use AMR01s.
Indeed, yes. Well, because the engine didn't run, it was very hard to tell if there was anything wrong with the chassis or not. So they managed to save the cash a little bit by flogging on the chassis to various other new projects. As you say, Henri Pescarolo being one and Delta Wing being the other. Now, quick time's coming in. Olivier Beretta. Now, see, there's something that's hard to read straight away. Olivier Beretta in the cool Ferrari 458 Italia. Exactly.
That was a bit of habit, wasn't it?
How many times are we going to do that?
Because I looked at that and I went, Ferrari.
Yes, exactly. Jaime Melo second in Ferrari. Jörg Bergmeister third in the 45 Flying Lizards Porsche. Fourth is Jimmy Bruni in the AF Corsa 458 Italia. Fifth is the Aston Martin Vantage. Sixth, Richard Leitz in the 77 Felbermayr Proton Porsche.
The top five are covered by just over half a second.
Yes.
So it's still pretty tight. And Richard Leitz hasn't got the speed yet. I'm sure he'll be his 0.9 behind, hardly even trying.
He's actually done a lap more than Jaime Melo, who's second.
But you don't need to cool down lap, speed down lap. We have gone dipped below the 2 minutes. It's 1:59.0 we've just seen from Jimmy.
Ooh, little wicked twitch there from
Jaime Melo, who has picked up the drive with luxury racing because we don't have Risi Competizione this year.
Yep.
So that's a disappointing for all of us because of Giuseppe Risi is a fantastic guy, but Jaime Melo has got himself a very good drive with another Ferrari, and he's currently on pole of the class. I think I saw that on the screen up above.
So Ferraris and Porsches at the front, and the Aston Martin's in the top five. What about other things? Where are the Corvettes, I hear you ask, Nick?
Well, the Corvettes currently are in a class 8th and a class... a class 9th and a class 10th. Now, Oliver Gavin is 200 seconds faster than Jan Magnussen. They're going the same speed. Unfortunately, that speed is 1.6 seconds at a pace, Martin.
And also the BMW's, Jürg Müller, right behind him.
Well, the BMW is interesting because this is the only part program they're doing in endurance cars. They're not at Le Mans. They're only here with the ALMS team.
Yep.
And their focus has been entirely on the DTM cars. So it's an interesting situation, really, whether they've done any development over the winter at all.
It would be a shame if that car drops off the pack because, I mean, it's been one of the elements of an absolutely epic GT category in ALMS racing for the last two seasons. But you can understand how... Yes, BMW are probably much, much more excited about going DTM racing and getting that right.
Someone has to be.
Yes.
So currently the order is, with about 5 minutes to go, it's Jaime Mello in the Ferrari from Olivier Beretta in the 71 Ferrari from Jimmy Bruni in the 51 Ferrari. Yeah, Magnussen has leapt up now to four from just 0.9 of a second off in the Chevy Corvette. Then we have Jörg Burgmeister in the 911 GT3 RSR in... fifth, and then Joey Hand in the BMW the LMS class, and then Stefan Mucha, who's currently in seventh and is still not below 2 minutes at the moment.
Oh, Joey Hand's jumped up the order then, hasn't he? That's very good.
So yeah, it's Mello from Breen Bretta.
Oh, just for a moment, we almost got us. No, because we've lost the audio. No, we've just got track effects.
We thought we were going to see something.
That was nearly excitement there, wasn't it?
Well, the closest we've got so far, absolutely. But yes, it is as close as you expect it to be. I mean, there's only less than a second between the first five. And those first five obviously are in only two chassis now because Ollie Gavin has come up to third place.
Yes.
So the Chevy's really motoring on their second flying lap.
And just for a moment, the on-screen graphics showed that 97 had Adrian Fernandez in. So have they already taken one driver out and put another one into that?
That would seem more like a mistake. It would make a lot of sense to do that. The rules are, no rules against it. The only rule is the person who takes the fastest lap has to start the car. All three guys can go if they want. And you need to start, of course, on three of the four tyres you qualify on.
Rob Bell out in the Paul Miller Racing car at the moment, in 18th in the combined class. So scroll up the screen so we can see what's going on with the bottom half of the page. Where's he gone? So, I can't see that at all anywhere on our timing screen, but it's on the ticker across the top of the screen, so I'm confused. Just over a minute remaining. Car number 51, currently second fastest, Jimmy Bruni in the class. It is a Ferrari 1-2-3, with Olivier Beretta in a Ferrari ahead of Ollie Gavin, his former Corvette teammate, who's still in the Corvette.
The scroll show all the glasses, they add on extra cars, they still lead the best rest of the team. The GTC cars are currently 20th overall, which of course is still 25 or 30 cars to go out and push them back.
And Jimmy Bruni goes to pole position. The timing screen will catch up eventually with the pictures. That looked like going in a little deep from the number 4 Corvette. And as you can clearly hear, Jimmy Bruni on another flyer. He's not going to let this point go to waste if he can avoid it. Jaime Mello was the man on pole position, but I think that is his car now in the pit road.
Olivier Beretta has parked it.
Ollie Beretta, so it is.
He's second there, of course, the car, so perhaps he's not going to try and take another
F3000 driver, former F3000 driver, shares with Andrea Bertolini and Marco Ciocci.
Well done, excellent work. Jimmy Bruni is now confirmed the top 158.4. He's 3 tenths ahead of Jaime Mello.
Checker flies.
He's a further half. No, 3 tenths ahead of Ollie Gav. So a good performance by the Corvette's got up to speed towards the end.
Ollie Gav has got in front of Ollie Beretta, who was third when he came into the pits and is now fourth as he stands there. Aston Martin has slipped down to ninth place from being third early on. And again, let's just have a little listen in. Only a little, listening.
You get a bit of onboard fry. It's got a very distinctive V8 bellow from the Corvette as it goes by.
Exactly right. And just a few minutes pause now as the track clears itself. No halt, no lame, no broken down cars, no HRTs in this one. And, oh, some sotto voce there, whispering from...
we're just about 20 minutes. See if we can get young Graham in.
Oh, OK. Well, in that case, let me...
His fader, he's on.
He's on that one. Ooh.
Hello, Graham.
Yes, he's on that fader. He's unfortunately speaking through a dial. Good. All I can hear is echo of Hindhoff in the background.
Echoes of Hindhoff.
Yes. Which is never a good thing at any stage.
Sounds like possibly actually maybe some typing.
Jimmy Bruni very happy with that pole position as he gets out of the car in the pit lane, celebrates with Amato Ferrari's mechanics, the AF Corsa team with pole position, and Jamie Howe is down there. Let's see if we can. Oh no, it's not. It's Louise.
With his team manager.
Kevin Jankolov is the killer. Visma, well done. Put it on pole, thanks for the point. It's marvellous. Landon's third teammate there as well. So basically, it's waiting for Simon Louise to get the word, but it was Jimmy Bruni who put the car on pole for GTE Pro for Ohio Mello. Both of them Ferraris, and Jan Magnussen in the 03 Corvette. Ollie Gavin in the 4 Corvette. Magnussen got him on the last lap. Olivier Bretta in the Ferrari.
John Maria,
in the
great
fifth.
Work from you there. Obviously celebrating with the teams. Great job.
Yeah, it was brilliant. I mean, for all the team, I'm so happy. For my teammates, they've been working so hard for me. Good start.
What does this mean for you tomorrow? Mindset?
I mean, last year when I was in pole, I didn't have the child. Everybody said to me, this year you lost 1 second because I have a child now. So I want to dedicate this pole to my daughter, and she will arrive tomorrow.
She's your lucky charm, hopefully.
Yeah. Thank you.
Jimmy, one more time. Oh,
there we are. There you go. Nice little interview from Jimmy Bruni.
Is he losing the second because he actually got the child in the car? Is it a weight penalty?
No. I don't believe that's the way they... I think they still bolt lead in.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, I don't think small children are allowed yet.
You can't use... Yeah, well, no. I've got a three-month-old, she weighs 12 pounds. Let's
no,
go for
exactly. Because depending on time of day, of course, their weight can fluctuate wildly.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, of course, are on pole then from Luxury Racing. Ferrari 1-2, Corvettes 3 and 4. Jan Magnussen, in the end, a flying lap in the 003 to go ahead of car 4, Ollie Gav. Ollie Barretta, 5th. Jerry Hans, BMW, in 6th position. So, yeah, nice little sprinkling. 2 Ferraris, 2 Corvettes, BMW, all in the top half dozen. Best Porsche, Jörg Bergmeister, and the Lizards car in 8th place.
You've got to think, though, that... Richard Leitch in the leading, what would be known as the leading for Porsche, the Veltmeier Porsche, they're down in the, well, it's not where they're down, but they're 1.8 seconds off the pace, which is surprising.
Yes.
They did only do 4 laps, so that could be a case of went out, wasn't quite right, bringing in the tyres, because that would be the tyres they used in the first stint.
Could be the case. Also, could be slightly worrying. You don't really want to start. Of course, cars like the Lizards and the Corvettes aren't going to do the whole championship, but you know, you don't want to end up fighting your way. As far as you know, once you get 3 or 4 laps in, you're going to be fighting your way through all sorts of traffic anyway. So maybe neither here nor there.
Hi, I'm Alan McNish. We're here for the Sebring 12 Hours, the first round of the World Endurance Championship. Let's do a couple of laps. See this historic circuit. So here we are at Sebring, first round of the World Endurance Championship. And the funny thing is, the circuit hasn't really changed that much since it started. I remember watching a video from the 1973 season, and the bridge just out of the last corner was exactly the same. The start and finish, the view we're going to see now, was exactly the same as it was back then. And that's what gives it that little bit of extra character. We should do a couple of laps just to see the uniqueness of this track. Turn 10 Club over there, look to the right. They're fantastic, those guys. Those guys build their own grandstands. They have their own party. And why exactly here? because it's one of the biggest braking areas. It's one of the best overtaking areas on the circuit, because we come up to turn 13, a blind entry down into third gear. You get on the concrete and the front of the car washes away. You say, no, 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 I need you to come back. And then you're on the throttle. Third gear, fourth gear, fifth gear, through double kink lefts. Now, these are quick. And it's your cars come together because you're overtaking. You have 64 cars and you're just squeezing past, trying to get two people through that point together. Very, very tricky. Threading the eye of the needle. Now, the end of the lap, turn 17. Sorry, this is a big, big corner. You brake an apex right on the wall. It's hard on down the gears and the car's slipping and sliding. You're trying to get in there and then you hit this. Boom, the first bump, then the second one, you can't see the second one, under the bridge, and then now the third bump, a long right-hander before you slide out, and then you try to pass as close to the wall as you can to start another lap. Now here, we'll see turn one. This is what it looks like at the start of the race.
Straight from Alan McNish, right into on board with the 44 HPD Honda, the ARX 03 as it is now, or 03B.
That's the P2 goggles, P2 qualifying, yep. And prototype challenge as well for your ALMS fans. And this is the car that is uncertainly, I would guess, they've given the qualifying to Stefan Sarrazin, given the choice of Enzo Ponticello and Ryan DL, thank you.
Dalziel. Just go with Dalziel and everybody can roundly criticise you for now until Christmas.
Probably will, that's true. But it's Stefan Sarrazin, the ace qualifier, the man who stuck the car in pole, what, three times at Le Mans?
Yep.
And obviously an ex-rally driver as well, and he's an ex-Formula 1 driver. He's won out in Brazil many years ago with Minardi.
Another ex-Formula 3000 driver. Gosh, there's a lot of ex-Formula 3000 drivers in the field. Should we move on from F3000 now?
No, but it's you need a theme for a show, and it's our theme for the show is F3000 drivers we have looked at.
I thought ours was there's no milk for the coffee.
It could be, that's possible, yes.
So while we wait for the timing and scoring to catch up, let's have a look at what we might expect from the LMP2 class. Well, apart from anything else, we're going to have a lot of surprises. New cars, new chassis, new teams and new driver combinations. Going to make life very difficult if you're trying to put money on anything.
I think P2 was a class that suffered really badly last year from the implementation of the new regulations, because the grandfathering and then the cost capping and the fact that the cars from the previous year couldn't compete with the cost capped Orica 03, especially with the Nissan engines. We saw the HPDs have been all conquering within the Strakker being completely uncompetitive, and that was we also saw some teams having to move up to P1 because of that was how they had the chassis set up. So it's the year to settle out a year. A lot of cars have been sold. Lola has sold a shed load of cars. Orica has sold a shed load of cars. And virtually all the cars now are running to 2012 specifications, so you haven't got that big disadvantage. They've got to run the engines for a while, so they now understand them significantly better. There's two or three engines that are working well, so those are in the back of just about all the cars. So we've started with a much more level playing field engine chassis-wise, and then it's up to the team and the drivers to make the difference.
Well, of course, one of the features that we're going to see a lot of is drivers working at the wheel, because although you can either have an open car or a coupe, most teams have gone with an open car. A couple of Lola B1280s, which is their closed coupe, Nissan engine car for Gulf Racing Middle East, Lotus engined car number 31, and a Nissan engine car. Yes, badged as Lotus. But also, of course, we've got the appearance of things like a Morgan.
Yes, an Oak Morgan. There's a,
yeah.
In fairness,
which is ironic because Morgan's the famous thing made from ash.
Steal John's line, because John did say that there's more badge engineering going on in this particular field than there was in British Lay the whole of the 70s.
Than in the whole of Coventry put together. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
People something else.
But that's great, because it allows people to, I mean, and particularly the success of the Lola program being so adaptable to different engines allows various people to put a program together, either in different global regions with maybe the same engine manufacturer, all with different engine manufacturers. And the whole point of LMP2 is it is a customer-led class, whereas LMP1 is really led by major motor manufacturers. And actually, it shows the strength of sports car racing that we've got so many P cars in the P2 class.
The P2 class has been designed to encourage non-works environments and gentlemen drivers and teams that way, and it's designed to be an attractive place for people to put their money and their experience. And it's interesting because more in the ELMS, the European Le Mans Series, yeah, you've got so many P2s, it's kind of taken some of the traditional numbers out of the GT class. And people decide, oh, I have a P2 car, it's cost capped, I don't know how much it's going to cost me, I know I'm a gentleman driver, I'm against other gentleman drivers, yep. And it's a remarkably level playing field. Rather than being on, I haven't got this, I can't win, I haven't got that, I can't win, it's not like the days of the Porsche Spyder, you know, Porsche Spyder had a chance, because there are no effectively works, I say works cars anymore.
Stefan Sarrazin at the top of the pile at the moment.
There are very good drivers, though.
Pierre Caffer, second fastest. Elton Julian, third quickest, ahead of Christophe Bouchoux. So Captain Grumpy won't be very pleased with that.
Well, Elton Julian, of course, is in the Greece Motorsport Zytec,
yep,
which is, of course, the team that won the ILMC class, P2 class, and also won Le Mans last year, with this car. The older machine, which we're seeing at the ELMS races, and also Le Mans, where their team will have Brundle and Brundle, and Ordonez, which should be a quite impressive team for anyone to field as far as interest from the press is concerned. The Starworks team, which Stefan Sarrazin currently has the car on pole position, that's a car which is the ARX03, I think is still currently running under a waiver to last year's regulations.
Lap from Sarrazin. He's just put it nearly a second clear of anybody else.
I'm going to contradict myself, because it has got the big honking holes. I actually know that has been updated to 2012, because obviously those of you who know about the look of the cars, the P cars have to have big open holes by both wheels this year. It's designed to reduce downforce.
And also cuts down on damage replacement of louvers, because there are none there to be damaged. Which
is a good point. And it also cuts down on how bolshy your particular scrutineer is in the pit lane. But whether he calls you in to make a change with the bloke up there, that's all right, you carry on going. So Sarah's had nearly a second ahead of Elton Julian. Jordan Tresson, another result of the Academy, is currently running in third.
Very good run from him, Jordan Tresson, up to third place. Although the timing screen hasn't reflected that, so that's straight in at number three with a bullet ahead of Frank Meyer and Martin Plowman, the Indy Lights driver racing in the Oak Racing Morgan. So Plowy getting
Martin ran two or three IndyCar races last year. So he's
and
damage.
That's an HPD, and it's a black HPD. One. Is that one of the level five cars?
You would say that looks like it's definitely a level five car from that. We have a red flag with 21 minutes of this.
And that looked like turn one.
It's gone in hard.
Straight into the barrier. Well, missed the tyre wall and hit the concrete wall, which is always a bit of a worry. We're on board with a level five car. Caption, please, Mr. Producer. Oh, he hits the wall on the inside. That is the accident. Goes in sideways. That's Bouchoux. That is Christophe Bouchoux's helmet. He shakes his head.
So that's the 55.
Let's see that again, because he was trying to negotiate traffic and turned in with the concrete wall at the apex and clipped the wall.
Now, the clock is still running, so the clock has not been stopped with this red flag.
Well, the red flag is out.
We did
see that might
Peugeot
be the end.
Got caught out very badly at Spa on red flags in the past. But that's
okay. It was a... Well, he's going to say there was a meandering Aston Martin closing the gap.
Either the 28 or the 29, but we can't tell because they're both painted the same way in a Golf and a Golf.
So
either one of the loaded B1280 Nissans from Golf Middle East did come out in a kind of a what looked like a slightly wandery way.
Yeah, looked like he'd run out wide and then rejoined the track. Bouchoux saw the gap closing as somebody meandered across in front of him slowly. Nevertheless, there was still a whacking great concrete wall at the apex.
So as it stands, as the session stopped, it's likely that it's not going to get going again in time for P2 qualifying to start again. There's only 4 minutes of P2 qualifying left, or 4.5.
Yeah, so
and
that
we have
would
Olivier
appear to be
Clark, who is actually on pole.
In the Morgan.
Morgan.
Yay!
Olivier obviously running in the Oak Racing car, you know, with Jacques Nicolet and his other horse.
Right, I now want Tim to Google Morgan results 24. At Sebring to see if a Morgan
with,
has A, ever raced
Matthew
there, or B, ever
Le
been.
So he's taking pole, and Olivier Plot, obviously is one of the top drivers. Stefan Sarrazin is running second. We have Elton Julian in third.
Oh, Nick's just got a punch for a factual inaccuracy. Now, there's a system I think we could use a bit more. As we look at the Audi Brains Trust on the wall, Olivier Plas, Stefan Sarrazin,
Elton Julian. I didn't read that note at that point.
No, he just got punched. I have no idea what the note said either. It possibly said, I'm going to punch you hard now.
Ah, I see. And then we have Frank Meyer is in fourth. John Martin, of course, is the ex A1GP driver for Australia.
Ah, right, not the producer.
Also has run in, what's that other one they do now? Super League.
Super League, yes,
as well.
In the now defunct Super League.
There are many defunct championships. And he's now ploughing his trade in P2 with one of the many Orica O3s.
Excellent.
So Christophe Bouchoux had actually got the car into sixth before he planted it into the
Well, he was fourth barriers. When he went off.
I think you find it kind of went...
Yeah.
Had to catch up. And then Martin Plowman is in seventh. Luis Diaz is in eighth. Pierre Caffer is in ninth. And Thomas Holzer is in tenth.
That, you see, Z there is a TS sound.
Holzer. And there's at least two or three P2 cars and PC cars that didn't actually get out at all. Though Bruno Junquera has put the car on pole for
ahead of Ernie Vizzo. Wow. So they had good South American battle there in the PC class.
Like a champ car race from 5 years ago.
Yeah, Mimo Gidley's in there as well. So good call. Yeah, come on, scroll down. Let's see who else would have been on the same chair. Well, 5 years ago, you wouldn't have had Ernie Vizzo, but you would have had Bruno Junquera and Mimo Gidley. Butch Leitzinger, sixth in the PC class. Oh, dear. Everything's dying on us.
Yeah, it's locked up. I'm
afraid. That's Bouchoux, then.
That's very odd. Anyway, so yeah, so we currently have the clock ticking down. It's now at 17:33. At 15 exactly, this particular qualifying, the P2 and PC qualifying will stop.
Do you know, yeah.
And the P1 will start.
Do you
can
know
see
what?
That
it won't.
Andre Lotterer will be qualifying the number one car.
Yep. There's a whole load of. Are they all new Stilos? Everybody seems to have all these big Chinny Wonder, Chinny Reckon helmets.
No, I think there's a kind of a. Oh. Final refresh on the screen there, see if I can get to it. I can scroll her down.
Okay, now
see.
The data logging isn't working because car number three, the R18 plus Audi of Timo Bernhardt, Romain Dumas, and Loic Duval, shows all of them being in the car.
Oh, well, it hasn't actually gone apart. I don't think it's actually gone. They haven't gone out
should
yet.
Should happen when you plug in your radio connector. That's what transmits
should,
to
should
the.
Should do, because they're not actually out yet. But the slightly damaged HPD. Is sitting on the back of the flatbed.
You say slightly. I say, luckily, it's a long while till the race.
Well, it didn't look like a chassis damager. It was going to be a few quid, in fairness.
He twonked the wall before he hit anything else. So I'm saying it might be.
Is that, that's Tom. So Tom, Christensen,
Tom Christensen
is going
will
to be
in car
qualifying
number two.
So we know it's Andre Lotterer and Tom Christensen. The Audis there lined up, three abreast, or three in a line, waiting now. But so theoretically, they should be going out in a minute. We don't know when the green flag will wave, but that does mean that P2 qualifying is over, and Olivier Plas has qualified on pole and taken that point for the team.
Squeaky chair. I slightly worry about the tyre wall, which they haven't even looked at starting rebuilding yet. So I think that's it's Romain Dumas. Incidentally, for Helmut Spotters, who is in third in car number three, third in the queue of Audis.
You've got to be careful with those Helmut Spotters.
Indeed, you definitely do. Who's going to qualify the Muscle Milk car? Lucas Lure, Simon Pagino, or Klaus Graf? That's got to be an arm wrestling contest last night over dinner.
Be Lucas or Simon, I should think.
Yeah.
Simon's slightly lighter, I think. He's like small, because Lucas is quite tall and lanky, so...
Cool. Let's play the Who Is It game. Who is going to qualify the number 12 Rebellion? Nico Prost, Neil Yarny, or Nick Newboy Heidfeld?
I think Neil Yarny will qualify that one.
Yeah, my money would be on him as well. I wouldn't give it to Nick Newboy.
Heidfeld's only in the long. Is only on the long races, so you know you don't want to start handing out your qualifying, do you? Now,
well,
the thing to remember is when if you get a point for pole, the car gets a point, and all the drivers get a point, irrespective of who qualified it.
Good.
So you can't lose the world championship because your teammate. Got one more pole than you did, as we can
right.
see Brad Kettler there waiting to wave off the number one car, but he's going to have to wait for the green flag to disappear first, the red flag to disappear first, and the green flag to come out. And it's already 18 seconds past when that should have happened.
Engines are running, and they're being, well, no, Brad's now being told, or now telling his car not to go to the pit road exit, because past him went the Straka racing car in its new and unfamiliar white and blue livery. Nick Leventis, Danny Watts and Johnny Kane. Money on that being Danny Watts, I would reckon, is pretty strong.
I think it's... but Johnny has done some qualifying before, but I think it's more about Danny, yeah.
Johnny, not related at all to Stephen Kane, for whoever's doing the biographies on the ALMS website. Not brother of.
Really?
No, well, definitely not.
They're both Irish, aren't they? So.
Yeah, both called Kane, both from Ulster, not related. Although, clearly, probably in the dim and distant, they are.
Yes, and some... So, Belfast. So out come all the P1 cars, and all bar one of these, and we're going to see 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 11, and only one of those, or two, sorry, only two of these are ALMS cars. That's the Muscle Milk HPD we talked about earlier, and the Dyson racing car. The rest is three Audis. There's two Rebellions painted up as Lotuses.
Okay, we've got an official holding the number one Audi at the end of pit road, and there is another Audi being held further down in the penalty box, and Audi number... So Audi being penalised. If Peugeot ain't going to qualify, nor are you guys.
They are holding him in a penalty box for no discernible reason, and now the number one's in the penalty box for no discernible reason.
Ah, maybe they're doing petrol then diesel qualifying, and now in the number two car, Tom Christensen is waving a marshal over, or
he needs to engage first gear, lift the clutch, and off it rolls the car two. Tom inside. Andre Lotter in the car one, they both... That's a little odd vignette, isn't it, of strangeness?
Yes. Two Audis being held for reasons that we can't discern by race officials. Now, you notice those race officials were in trousers and short-sleeve shirts. That's because it's not race day. Fuel only burns in American Le Mans pit lanes on race day.
I've heard that.
Yeah. They'll all be fire-suited up for race day, but for qualifying... Well, it's... I suppose it's not quite so hectic.
It's Benoit Troyer who's qualifying the...
Oh, checkered flags out.
That's a bit odd.
I'm sensing just a degree of confusion here.
Have they let them out because the car's been cleared, but the barrier's not fixed?
Why would they do that?
Because they've got bad communications between the two elements of the circuit? I don't know.
No, they're all on radio headset. I have no idea what's going on. 12 minutes on the clock. Checkered flag being waved at the starter's stand as if it was the end of the P2 session, but that wouldn't be checkered flagged because it's not a session, it's just a period of time. And in any way, it should be a green flag because they're now not under red flag conditions.
Yeah, I'd like at this point to be able to add something really, you know, incisive, but I haven't got a clue either.
No. Okay, moving on.
On the time of screen either. So,
no, that's because nobody's actually set a time, though.
But this says green.
Green, 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 green.
It says green, green, green. It's a red or end of session or perhaps a... So anyway, the P1 cars are seeming to still be going out despite the checkered flag. So they obviously, that checkered flag must be erroneous in some way.
Yes,
in fact,
the green flag's waving out on the circuit, so that's good news.
Tom's doing the tyre warming thing, bit of left-right jinking down the straight.
How is it that everybody, all drivers all say that weaving actually doesn't warm your tyres up, it's using the brakes, and yet all drivers still weave?
They get bored.
We just saw TK go out there. Do you know what happened?
Obviously with the stoppage, there seems to be a bit of confusion about the LMP2 session normally should have stopped, and it was the start of the LMP1. But both categories appeared to go out at once. To be honest, I'm not 100% sure what was happening. I think I'm in the same position as you.
And I'm sure that TK was just eager to get out there and get a clean lap.
Well, the philosophy was to go right at the beginning of the session, try and get a clean lap, and a traffic-free lap, which hopefully he will get. But obviously with cars on an in-lap, immediately after they've started, it certainly has, I would say, affected the first one, but maybe not the rest.
Thank you.
So... what happened was that the P2 cars went out for another lap, not realising their session was over, so they decided to hold the P1 cars, they waved the checkered flag for those P2 cars, saying, you silly sausages, it's finished 5 minutes ago, come in. So that was what was going on. They were having a traffic shuffling issue.
So Audi understood what was happening and the P2 cars didn't. Or Audi didn't quite understand, or
Audi nobody quite understood. The P2 cars decided, well, in fairness, it was a big confusion because between different championships, whether you stop normally these days, a red flag and a qualifying or practice session means the clock arrows are running. But there are different rules for different branches of the sport about whether a red flag in qualifying stops the clock. You know, in F1 it doesn't sometimes, and sometimes it does. It's,
yes.
You know, it's an odd situation.
Hey-ho.
But we are now deep into qualifying P1. And it's
We're still on outlaps.
Which Audi do you think is going to be on pole?
I think there'll be a number order.
Do you?
I just don't know what order the numbers will be in.
Honestly.
Well, look, now that timing and scoring has died, a little bit more onboard audio. This is the number one car coming back down pit road. Number two car has set a 1 minute 50 pole lap. A Rebellion. Those are mainly P2 cars now back in pit road. A couple of P1 cars still waiting to go out. Across the line goes the Zytek yellow helmet. Danny Watts is in that, so that is it is. He is qualifying the Straka. Beg your pardon, not the Zytek, the HPD. Two seasons behind with that.
That's all right. You'll catch up by that.
Yeah, by about Suzuka.
So you see, the noise you can hear on board is a diesel, so it's not going to be like, you know, a frenetic whiz, it's just trundling along at 4,500 revs as it does.
Again, you know, one of those things I can't wait for at Le Mans is to do that onboard thing where it's in Prius mode, where it's not actually doing anything, and it's just whoosh, or transmission, or rumble of tyres, or something. Wow!
The Audi just, the car 3 has just gone straight to the par by 3 seconds.
Yes. And the number two car has just gone on top 0.68 faster.
So Tom Christensen is currently showing top on the screen, which is slightly wrong at the one.
Well, the timing screen's about 25 seconds behind the pictures, 20 seconds behind the pictures, so it will catch up. But Audi number two is fastest at the moment. And Inish on the pit box watching his teammate on the onboard camera monitors.
So it's Audi number one on the 147.3 when I'm doing that. From the Oak racing, Guillaume Mahou, who's 1.3 seconds behind, but Tom Christensen.
This is going to be quicker again.
Now.
Yes, 146.8, he goes half a second quicker, Christensen. Well, do you know what? It's going to be a bit like Chevrolet in the World Touring Car Championship. They're not going to let it get boring, are they? Oak Racing third, Muscle Milk fourth, JRM fifth. Tom Christensen's number two car on top of the pile. And looking at Guillaume Moreau at the moment in the Oak Racing Pescarolo Judd. And all...
Oddly, just one of the many 113 cars in golf colours.
Yes. And all Franco-speaking team with Bertrand Baguette, Franco-Belge, and Dominic Kreiheimer, also a Franco-Belge, despite the name. I believe he's Franco-Belge, a Francophone, maybe. Anyway... They are still showing the three orange lights and the red lights on the side, allowing for NTSC pictures, which show him as the fastest man. And number three Audi comes up 0.45 short, Romain Dumas.
He stays in second place.
Those of you who were watching the onboard lap with Alain McNish driving you around in the SUV, wasn't quite as quick looking as it is when you're fully committed in a P car with as much downforce as these things produce.
So currently it's Tom Christensen from Romain Dumas. Guillaume Moreau is third, he's about 1.9 seconds off. I think in third now we have the...
Klaus Graf shot up to third now in the Muscle Milk car.
Yeah.
Guillaume Moreau in fourth spot for Oak Racing. David Brabham in the new team for him, JRM in fifth spot. Manu Kalar sixth for Pescarolo. Danny Watts in seventh place for Straka Racing. So, the timing and scoring now currently running not 20 seconds, but 3.5 minutes behind.
So historically, we know exactly what was going on.
Yeah, 3.5 minutes. It's like a time capsule on a computer.
They grab him now.
Audi number one goes top, and Audi number three goes faster. Lena Gade watching impassively from the timing screens on the people perch. Good battle here between the Audis. They are getting faster and faster and faster. Now the pole is in the 46s. 4.5 minutes remaining. What was last year's pole, Tim? Oh, don't shrug.
One something.
See, we're well. Oh, and the Muscle Milk car. Oh, no, it's Audi number three.
Number three Audi has spun just about near pit entrance.
Ah, excellent. And the satellite has gone down as well. So it's all going very well indeed.
So there will be a slight delay now. We'll wait for the timing screen to catch up.
Yeah, I would hit refresh fairly quickly there because without the pictures, we are in real trouble. No, it's still 6 minutes behind and there's only a couple of minutes left remaining in the session. So we've lost the audio from the satellite and the pictures from the satellite. And the backup satellite has died as well. I don't think, personally, that there's anything wrong with the satellite. I'm assuming there may be a bit of digit extraction required at the other end.
Do you think there might be a satellite booking issue?
No. I can't imagine they actually booked it for less than the ordained time of qualifying. I think there may be a little bit of uplinkery, not uplinking, probably.
That's an interesting use of the word uplinkery.
There will be phone calls being made very, very volubly at the moment, and probably with only 2 minutes left in the qualifying session, all to no effect whatsoever.
No. So anyway, with 6 minutes to go of qualifying, it was Tom Christensen from Roman... it was André Lotterer was on pole, then Tom Christensen was second, Roman Dumas was third.
So that was with 5 minutes to go.
Klaus Graf had put the thing on fourth, Guillaume Moreau was fifth.
Guillaume Moreau.
Guillaume. Anyway, Neil Yarnall, you're right, he was the one who qualified the car.
Yes.
He's in sixth.
It was a good gamble, wasn't it?
David Brabham with the JRM, HPD. Andrea Beliki with the second of the Rebellion cars is in eighth. In ninth, quite a long way down. It's only, what, 3.33 seconds off the time of the leading Audi. But more importantly, he is 1.6 seconds off the at least similar, if not exactly the same, car of Klaus Graf. They've just gone a little bit quicker, Danny, my latest refresh, and Danny's now gone across in
4 minutes ago, he was sixth overall.
And he was only a second behind Klaus Graf.
Yep.
Who was our last pick to qualify that car, so it shows what we know. So those are the guys who are moving up. I think all the P1s are sitting happily on the top of the screen. They certainly are, apart from Chris Dyson, who's not been out yet.
No, which is a bit of a worry.
Lap. He's got a couple. He's done two slow laps in 4 minutes of the pit, so it might be. He does have enough time because this is obviously is historical. This timing screen. It's like the Magna Carta of time.
Indeed, it's being sent over by several very puffed out pigeons
they
at the moment.
Particularly tired the pigeons.
Again, you see, this class we've got some well-established lineups, lots of Audi drivers that we know, and we can you can even pronounce most of them. But then you've got teams like JRM, David Brabham, okay, well known, Peter Dumbreck, not quite so well known as a prototype driver, probably should have been for many years, and Karun Chandok. Now that's got to be an entertaining car to watch. In fact, that's got to be an entertaining team to hang around with.
I think Karun is a very, very lively and pleasant guy. Peter Dumbreck is hardly a shrinking wall. I remember him mostly from driving. Obviously, he was one of the guys who flipped a Mercedes, wasn't he?
Yeah,
all those years ago.
Indeed.
The last few years, he spent a lot of it driving Spykers.
Yes.
Sitting in the garage in a Spyker. And he turned up last year as well, driving a couple of races. I can't remember if it was P2 or it was GT.
He's done Nissan GT programs and all sorts of stuff. Yeah, he's a very fully fledged sports car race. And Chris Dyson, if that car gets moving, Guy Smith and Stephen Kane. I mean, that's going to be a very capable car in that class as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Dyson rolling out one car here, but basically supporting most of the P1 class in the American Le Mans Series. It now looks like they're going to have a third car out. Mm. So really, yeah, bringing all their guns to bear.
Yeah, I mean, and the good thing, obviously, because I was worried about this, is that thanks to the association with Rebellion, we have got a Lotus in P1 because it was about the only thing they weren't in every single motor racing in the world.
I believe the Mark III MX5 Championship hasn't got any Lotus involvement yet, but
we'll
surely that will
that
come.
That will be sorted
that
out
will
very,
come.
Very soon. So
does nobody else see the word Lotus and think then... instead of like Lotus Renault or Lotus Honda or Lotus whatever, I just say Lotus spread thin.
I'm kind of wondering, you know, whether they we could hypothesise about the strangeness of Lotus's concept many, many times. It's just the idea if you say Lotus enough, it's like, you know, say Beetlejuice three times,
yes,
you'll buy one.
Yes.
If I see Lotus on three different types of cars, I'll buy one.
If I see Lotus three times on the same lap, then
they
will cease to exist.
Yes.
Or Or the, the demon.
If you don't see Lotus in the class, a fairy dies. we have a. Well, I think this could be the
chicken
time
flag
having,
is,
having
chicken flag
up.
Is out even on the timing screen.
And the rundown is, we believe there's a possibility it may change, but let's go for this being as it should be. In pole, it's André Lotterer in the number one car, the Audi R18, obviously. In second, Tom Christians in the number two car. And in third, Romain Dumais, number three car. You're right. Martin was absolutely correct. He's 1-2-3 order. The number 15 with René Moreau and the Oak Pescarello is in Klaus Graf is in fourth. Yeah. The HPD clinking in there. ARX. In fifth, it's Willem Moreau.
Guillaume.
Yes. There is David Brabham is in sixth overall. Danny Watts in seventh, so he's the slowest of the HPDs, which I'm sure he won't be pleased about. Then we have the brace of Rebellion / Lotus Lola Coupes.
Rebellion.
Neil Yarny slightly ahead of Andrea Balicki, and then in tenth Emmanuel Collard in the old Lady Pescarolo. Of course, that car from Spa will be the strange illegitimate child of Aston Martin and then Henri Pescarolo.
That's not a good phrase to come out with. Don't come out with that phrase again.
And is it by magic we have some pictures?
Yes. Oh, so let's have. We got no effects though.
No.
So Lena Gade busy chatting to her drivers as they come in, making sure they pick up all the pickup and all the debris and everything else.
So they weigh the right amount.
Well, and it's all ride height and all of the other bits and pieces as well. But pretty much as expected, it would have been a very strange qualifying session if Audi had not gone 1-2-3. Mm-hmm. Also, pretty much as expected, they were trying to knock each other's doors off. Well, not literally, but in terms of speed, to try and gain that pole, because none of them want to be second to their teammates.
Well, no, and it's there's an interesting spread. There's 1.12 seconds between the three of them on a relatively short lap, a 1:46 lap. They only have 0.6 of a class graph. The slowest Audi is only 0.6 faster than Klaus. Mm-hmm. He then is another 0.7 faster than Guillaume
Moreau, who's 1,200 ahead of David Brabham. That's right. A very close gap, and 1,500 behind him, Danny Watts. So those three cars together. Very close indeed.
Well, they've got Neil Yarny and Neil Yarny's again about, 400ths back from there. And Blicky 0.3, and Emmanuel Collard and the old car a little bit way off. But yeah, there's a couple of close areas. I mean, the question really for tomorrow's race is how much the Audis are prepared to race each other.
Yeah, a lot, I'm saying. An awful lot.
You know, do they go hell for leather, or do they just literally run within themselves and then take a couple of hours to go, see who's where?
Well, one thing we see from the timing screen, 23rd on the grid, Chris Dyson. That Dyson racing car is going to have a lot of work to do, I'm saying. It's going to be a very busy first lap because he is wedged in amongst all sorts of Ferraris. Here's Louise. Oh, no, we haven't got the audio. I've got her faded up and everything. Talking to André Lotterer. He's saying, for me, the car is quick.
I'm pleased I've got the pole. It was a bit tricky out there because we didn't know where we were going to start because of the... the red flag, but yeah, it was a good lap. I was slightly worried when
Well, the Audi TV guys are there, so you can go and log on online in a few minutes and get a clip from Audi TV. Unfortunately, they may have got us pictures back, but there is still a degree of finger trouble in the router, and so there's no audio coming over. Brad Kettle looks pretty happy with that. And Lotterer as well, actually. Although he could possibly do with finding a razor, I'd have thought. I'm not sure that looks doing an awful lot for him. A bit too Ben Constanduros, I think, for a professional racing driver.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, I know, and why not?
So that is the end of qualifying here for Sebring. The race will start at 2:30 in the UK. The race programme, I believe, is going to start at 2:00, Tim, tomorrow, and that'll be not Martin Haven. But I'm not going to make you too excited by telling you who I have accompanying me for that 13-hour marathon. No offence, Martin, I'd love him to, but Martin, I'm sure you've got something very important to do with mini bikes or something.
I've got to go and visit mothers for Mother's Day mothering. Yeah.
So coming up next on Radio Le Mans, it is the inside Starworks, which is very apt considering how well Stefan Sarrazin was pedalling that car earlier. And that was when John, only a couple of weeks ago, was second in class. Martin wasn't flicking me the V's, they were saying they're second in class. So Starworks, second in class in P2 with Stefan Sarrazin, and John took a trip round there. But for that is all for now from us here in... the Radio 1 Central South London studio. Martin, thank you very much for joining me and effectively rescuing me from a lack of information with your witty and eruditeness, and he even managed to work the kettle.
Erudition.
I'll be looking for someone tomorrow who's a lot less pedantic. Thank you all for listening, and please don't miss the whole main event starting at 2 o'clock UK, that's 3 o'clock in Europe, different times in America, here on Radio Le Mans. And now let's see what young John found when he went inside Starworks.
This programme is a Radio Show Limited production. For more, go to www.radiolemans.com. Radio Show Limited. We talk to the world.